Tonight, we'll hear the story of Crispy Bear. A long time ago, this little bear was alive because she listened to her father, so she was happy. But Crispy had one terrible problem. She was filled with curiosity. Yes, and one day, she saw something new and died.
Just like that?
Yes.
Oh. Same ending as every day.
I get it, Dad. I will never do anything new or different.
Good man, Thunk.
My family has always survived by living by my dad's one rule. Never leave the cave. We never had the chance to explore the outside world. But what we didn't know was that our world was about to change.
Eve, come down! Get to the cave! Go! Look out!
You really need to see this.
The Croods.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing just swell.
That's
good.
The
world's on fire, but we're going to talk about a movie, and that's better.
Yes, this helps distract us from the horrifying world around us, which is basically why we keep this podcast going, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, this time around, Mike, Nicolas Cage is going to return to animation in the most high-profile voiceover role yet that he's had in a movie, I think. And like so many others, this movie took a very, very long time to actually get made. And this one starts with a really interesting partnership. The movie we're talking about today actually began as a collaboration between director Kirk D'Amico and none other than Monty Python's John Cleese. I don't know if you noticed his name in these story credits. Yeah. He gets a story credit on the movie. But yeah, John Cleese was one of the creative minds behind the first incarnation of the Croods.
I had no idea. I didn't notice his name in the credits.
Yeah, so basically how it started, the two of them were working together on an adaptation of the Roald Dahl story, The Twits. And then that never happened. They began work on a screenplay about two cavemen on the run. And that movie was meant to be developed by Aardman Animation, the studio behind Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run. It was going to be a stop motion as part of a 5-film deal with DreamWorks Animation. And then around 2007, Aardman left the project and the rights reverted to DreamWorks. At that point, John Cleese left and he moved on into other things. But Kirk D'Amico stayed on as director and he was eventually joined by Chris Sanders, known in the animation world for his work on Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. The script, which was then called Crude Awakening, started to morph from a buddy comedy between two cavemen into a larger ensemble piece featuring a whole caveman family. And in 2013, the movie would finally hit theaters under the title The Croods. I know, Mike, you were very excited to talk about The Croods, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. I had actually seen this movie before, and I'm hyped to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, I had never seen The Croods before, but The Croods hit during kind of a slump period for DreamWorks Animation. The Shrek series was over, at least until, you know, Shrek 5, whenever that comes out.
Yeah, long may he reign.
Exactly, and a lot of their films were making money, but they were still underperforming compared to expectations. Movies like Rise of the Guardians, Turbo and Mr. Peabody and Sherman all hit in that time period. The Croods is actually one of the biggest hits from the 2010s for DreamWorks Animation, but DreamWorks still took a loss on it just because the rest of their movies weren't doing so hot. Yeah, rough. But the Croods enjoyed financial success and critical acclaim, which is a combo that DreamWorks doesn't hit nearly as often as their main rivals over at Pixar. They greenlit a sequel, which has gone in and out of development over the years, but now looks to be back on track to hit in 2020, Mike. So the Cage-a-sance is happening for real, and the Croods are going to be a major centerpiece.
Keeps on rolling, baby.
Exactly. The Croods also spawned a spinoff TV series on Netflix called Dawn of the Croods, which lasted 4 seasons. I don't know if you've noticed this, but basically every movie that DreamWorks puts out has a spinoff TV series, and all of them are on Netflix.
Now that you said it, I noticed it, but I think it was always there to begin with.
Yeah. Now, Nicolas Cage stars in The Croods as Grug Crude, the father of the Crude family. His rebellious daughter, Eep Crude, is played by Emma Stone, and their lives are upended when Eep meets a human named Guy, played by Detective Pikachu himself.
You son of a bitch.
Ryan Reynolds voices Guy. I had to mention that Detective Pikachu, as of this recording, just dropped its trailer yesterday and destroyed the internet.
And everyone's mind.
And everyone's mind. I can't even conceive of the fact that movie looks good. It's crazy. Also in the Crude family are Uga Crude, the mother voiced by Catherine Keener, which makes this an 8mm and an adaptation reunion. A very unlikely 8mm reunion, I should say.
Yeah, what?
Funk Crude, played by Clark Duke, which also makes this a kick-ass reunion there. And Gran, played by the legendary Cloris Leachman. And also in the movie, our co-director Chris Sanders as Belt, the sloth that hangs around Guy's waist. And you texted me yesterday saying that Belt is your spirit animal or something along those lines.
My soulmate, yeah.
Belt is great. And you might recognize Belt's voice, actually, because Chris Sanders also plays Stitch in Lilo and Stitch. And Randy Tom is credited as providing the voice of Sandy Crude, the baby. Now, Randy Tom is actually the film's sound designer and created her voice using creature noises. So he's credited as the voice of Sandy, But he's done the sound on everything from, like, Apocalypse Now to The Incredibles, and even worked on a Nicolas Cage movie once before, David Lynch's Wild at Heart. So that makes this a Wild at Heart reunion, too, sort of. And the film was written and directed by Kirk D'Amico and Chris Sanders, with John Cleese receiving a story credit. Kirk D'Amico began his career writing movies like Quest for Camelot and Racing Stripes, before making his directorial debut in 2008 with Space Chimps, a movie I only remember because it opened on the same day as The Dark Knight and horrifically bombed. he hasn't directed a film since The Croods, though he is currently working on a movie called Vivo for Sony Pictures Animation, which is said to feature songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, so that could be interesting. Meanwhile, Chris Sanders had been working for Disney for a long time, developing the story for movies like Aladdin and The Lion King before getting his first screenplay credit for Mulan. He made his directorial debut working with Dean DeBlois on Lilo and Stitch before moving on to How to Train Your Dragon and then The Croods. He's currently working on a live-action/CGI adaptation of Jack London's Call of the Wild, starring Harrison Ford and Dan Stevens, set for release in 2019.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. What a wild sentence you just said.
I know, right? Your mind was a little blown right there. You can't see this because this is an audio medium audience, but Mike just like shook his head in like disbelief. It was wild. It was Call of the Wild, if you will. And on a budget of $135 million, The Croods made about $587 million worldwide and topped the box office during its first weekend in North America, which was March 22nd, 2013. But if you didn't have Crude fever and were seeing something else that weekend, there were plenty of other options. There was Admission, a comedy drama starring Tina Fey and Paul Rudd, Inappropriate Comedy, a sketch comedy film starring Rob Schneider, Michelle Rodriguez, Adrian Brody, and Lindsay Lohan. That whole day is 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Love and Honor, a romantic drama starring Liam Hemsworth and Teresa Palmer, who was from The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Shout out to that movie, Cage.
Yeah.
And finally, the Gerard Butler action thriller Olympus Has Fallen came out that day. The first of two Die Hard and the White House movies released that year.
Yeah, you remember that? I forgot they did that.
Right, Olympus Has Fallen came out in March, and then I think like 3 months later, White House Down, and they're like the same movie. It was weird. and the IMDb plot synopsis for The Croods reads, after their cave is destroyed, a caveman family must trek through an unfamiliar, fantastical world with the help of an inventive boy. So, Mike, you had seen The Croods before. I'm guessing this was your second time watching the movie. So what are your overall thoughts on The Croods?
Yeah, The Croods, actually, it depends on how you count viewings. Because I believe this was one of the movies that, when I worked at FYE during college, was on the Blu-ray player when it came out on home video.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yes.
I also worked at that same FYE, and I remember you could only really play children's movies at FYE on the TV. So they would just play over and over again. So you would just see the same movie in bits and chunks for like months at a time, right?
Yep, until the next big kids movie came out. And it was even to the point where I remember just a weird anecdote about that. We had, I think it was Frozen Planet or Planet Earth or one of those like new BBC nature documentaries or whatever.
Yeah.
And we put that on the Blu-ray player just to like finally have something different instead of a kids movie. And someone complained because a polar bear eats a penguin or a seal, and like their kid got upset. So we had to go back to the kids movies. But anyway, yeah, so The Croods was on that. And then what would always end up happening to me with those movies is I would just be like, all right, I have to just sit down and watch this movie because like I'm going to go insane because I don't know what this movie happened. I can't figure it out in 15-minute chunks. But, I watched The Croods, and I had a blast with this movie. It's just, like, a delightful children's, like, family comedy. It's, like, some good action stuff, you know, the spooky saber-toothed tiger, which turns out to just be, like, an adorable kitten. And, like, that's great. And that's, I feel like that sums up this whole movie for me, is that it's sort of just a silly, fun story. Basically, where, you know, coming, you know, trying new things and don't be afraid of things just because they're different. You know, it's just like a good old wholesome family tale, you know, one of those like, oh, it gives me warm and fuzzy movies.
I am so delighted by how much you enjoy The Croods, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I just do. It's just a good movie.
No, I get it, man. I this was my first time seeing The Croods. I didn't start at FYE until probably after Croods Fever had died down a little bit. but yeah, I think The Croods is a very fun little romp. You know, it's just I think it's easily the best of the animated movies that we've seen Cage in so far. So there's that definitely. I mean, you know, they're like that's going up against, you know, I think the best one so far was probably Astro Boy. So like the bar wasn't like super high. Although I do expect that to change when Spider-Verse comes out. Just throw it out there.
Obviously.
That's going to be amazing. I don't think this is as good as like Lilo and Stitch or How to Train Your Dragon, Chris Sanders' previous movies.
No.
But the same sensibility behind those movies is there. I feel like there's that same kind of heart that those movies have that The Croods has as well. And I think it's often a very funny movie. It's got a very heavily like Looney Tunes influence, which I really love. You know, including like direct callbacks to like things that would happen on Looney Tunes. It might even be like a little bit of Monty Python, considering John Cleese was part of the early stages of this movie too.
I didn't pick up on that, but yeah, I love. It just is just silly, like and like in a like great way that we need in the grim dark world of 2018. I think you know. I think this. I don't know if they came out in this era, but like it sort of reminds me of like the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball movies, like that kind of like goofy kids movie.
I think this came out in the same year as Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, actually.
Yeah, I think that was another one of the Blu-ray movies that we would watch at FYE. Yeah, and like Frozen. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a fun time.
Yeah, I haven't seen. Speaking of, I haven't seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs in a really long time. I should give that another watch one of these days. That's completely irrelevant to the Croods cast, but...
Well, from what I remember in 15-minute chunks, it's pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
It's a lot of food puns, and that's basically all I'm there for.
Yeah, fair enough. I think the cast all works really well together in this movie. And even, like, I think the meatiest roles are obviously Nicolas Cage, Emma Stone, and Ryan Reynolds. But the rest of the family, like, bounce off each other really well. Like, it's just a really fun ensemble they've got assembled for this movie. And I also really love this movie's visual style. I think this movie has is animated really well. Roger Deakins was actually a visual consultant on this movie. Yeah, well, here's the thing. Roger Deakins was a consultant on one of the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I think the first one, actually. And after that, they kind of like looped him in, and like he helped out with a lot of DreamWorks movies in the 2010s. And The Croods was one of them. And I think there's a little bit of that influence there. You can kind of see like, you know, just the lush lighting and cinematography. And obviously, it's all CGI. But Roger Deakins has a great visual eye, and I think his influence helped out a lot of these DreamWorks movies in the 2010s. And I love just the contrast that goes from, like, you know, the first 20 minutes of this movie are in this, like, barren caveman world. Everything is brown and drab. And then they reach this, like, lush jungle world, and it kind of, like, bursts into color. It's, like, the equivalent of, like, when Wizard of Oz, like, jumps into color for the first time. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, or I was going to make a really lame reference, only because this movie is not culturally relevant, but when we first get, like, Sully as a an avatar, as a Navi, and he's, like, going through all the fluorescent stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it reminded me of that just because it's, like, you know, weird alien jungle stuff.
Fair enough. And that's also part of it, too. I think this movie is, it's, like, not an alien jungle in this movie, but at the same time, it, like, basically is. Because this movie has a very, like, reimagined version of prehistory, and I think that's a lot of fun. Like, it doesn't pretend to attempt historical accuracy, and instead just has, like, a bunch of, like, made-up plants and animals that could never exist. There's, like, you know, piranha birds or whatever, and it's, like, just, it's more entertaining for that reason, I think. Like, it's because it creates this kind of whole world like an Avatar, you're right.
Yeah, like the land whales, which sort of look like a Terry Gilliam sketch.
Right. Now you're just trying to connect it back to Monty Python whichever way you can, because you know John Cleese is part of this.
Correct.
Yeah. By the way, I reject the notion that Avatar is not culturally relevant. By the way.
I said that just for your entertainment.
I know that just, was a delayed reaction, but still.
I said that just FYE.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm tired. Don't worry about it.
Okay. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in The Croods, Mike? He is the patriarch of the Croods family.
I think he is a blast in this movie. Grug, right? That's his name?
Grug, yes.
Grug, yeah. I think it's the role he was born to play. No, that's an exaggeration. but yeah, I think his performance is a lot of fun. Him up against Ryan Reynolds, you know, just trying to protect his family and doing the best he can, and just being a dumb caveman. But it's really funny. I don't know. Just I can't put it to words exactly.
That's great for an audio podcast.
An audio podcast where we're supposed to talk about things.
I think Cage is real good in the movie. I think it's easily his best voiceover performance. And it's a nice change of pace from, like, the video on demand thrillers that we've been working through lately. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not. It has the screaming insanity, but, like, on purpose.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. The kind of screaming insanity you would expect from a caveman, I think.
Right.
For sure.
It was actually a great exercise for me. It was nice to know that I always had the Croods to, you know, report to stay in shape as a film actor. I've often said that voice is 50% of your performance, and all of the performance is imagination. And getting in that little aquarium-like box with the microphone was an opportunity for me to get in touch with what I call my instrument, because in between movies, you can feel rusty at times. And so this was a chance to stay in shape.
Cage is a very physical actor. Oftentimes, the recording cell was barely big enough to contain his inner barbarian.
Until now, cavemen don't need brains because we have these.
No, I mean, I'm a pretty physical guy. So, like, if you put me in a box with a microphone and a video camera and I'm trying to find a character, the hands are going to start going and the voice. For example, one of the things about him that really makes him a caveman is he likes to scream a lot.
Breakfast formation! I want to see some real caveman action out there. We do this fast, we do this loud, we do this as a family!
And I would think, well, what do I want him to sound like when he's screaming? Well, I like the way David Lee Roth from Van Halen could, like, put two notes together and go, I can't do it right now. But so I was trying to put that in Grug's voice as well.
And I think this movie would technically be a blockbuster for Nicolas Cage, I think, which, you know, it made a lot of money and stuff, even if it is animated. And, you know, I kind of described, like, Sorcerer's Apprentice as, like, his last attempt at a blockbuster when we talked about that movie. So I'm going to, you know, I honestly did not realize The Croods made as much money as it did. because it was The Croods. It just felt like, I don't know, I feel like maybe it was the title or something, but when it was coming out, I feel like I thought of it as, like, a joke. Like, it's like, it's The Croods. It's whatever, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like at this point in his career, he had become already that, like, straight-to-DVD meme joke guy. So for him to sort of basically be the lead, well, I guess Emma Stone's the lead, but, you know, be a main character in a kid's movie was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. How does that happen?
Yeah, and I mean, he'd already done that a few times, right, with, like, G-Force and Astro Boy and stuff, but this is, like, a pretty high-profile role for Nicolas Cage, right? Like, this is a much bigger role than those movies were, definitely.
And I mean, it sort of came, like, after the hump, right? His career had sort of already become a joke, culturally, I think.
Yeah, at this point. I mean, we talked about Ghost Rider 2 a few weeks back, and I posted I meant to mention it in the actual review, but I forgot to mention it, so I threw it in at the end of the episode, where there was an SNL sketch where, you know, for years, Andy Samberg would do a thing called Get in the Cage with Nicolas Cage on Weekend Update. Do you remember that at all?
Okay. Oh, on Weekend Update, yes.
Yes, so Andy Samberg would play Nicolas Cage, and, you know, usually, like, a different actor would come by out with him or whatever, and he would just describe Nicolas Cage movies and, like, that kind of thing. And it was, like, this very exaggerated Nicolas Cage impression. It was really funny. And there was one time where Nicolas Cage actually came out with Andy Samberg as Nicolas Cage, and it was around the time Ghost Rider 2 came out, and he was kind of making fun of Cage's persona then, and that was in 2012. You know, so this is 2013. So, yeah, we're already kind of past that point where, like, Cage's career is sort of silly and kind of considered, like, sort of a joke. So we've already had, like, movies like Season of the Witch and Stolen and, you know, Seeking Justice and, like, movies that were, like, considered, like, paycheck gigs or, like, video-on-demand gigs for Nicolas Cage. And so, you know, for him to kind of jump back into the spotlight sort of with The Croods, even though it's a voice role, like, that's kind of a big deal, I think.
I agree. Yeah, it's a step forward. It could be the precursor to the Cage-a-sance, one might argue.
A little bit. And actually, there's another movie we'll talk about, I think two episodes from now, called Joe, which was not nearly as commercially successful, but it was a huge critical hit. And that's a David Gordon Green movie, actually, who just directed the new Halloween. We're going to talk about that, I think, two episodes from now is when we'll talk about Joe. But that's
interesting.
That's another one where it's like there's like this sort of blip in the Cage career where it's like, oh, shit, things are big again. And then they kind of go back down for a bit. But then they're coming back, 2018, man. Mandy, we're talking about it soon, one day.
we're actually getting kind of close.
We're sort of getting close. It's kind of crazy to think we're, like, approaching the end of this podcast, you know?
Wow.
Like, what will we even do with our lives if we don't have Nicolas Cage movies to talk about, you know?
You know, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, I guess we'll
get there when we get there.
We'll get there when we get there to the Jeff Goldblum podcast or whatever. It's not a bad idea. Anyway, back to Nicolas Cage. I think his relationship with Eep, Emma Stone's character, does serve as, like, the emotional backbone of this movie. And I think it really works. I think there's, like, an actual... Yeah. Like, I was saying before that Chris Sanders kind of brings the heart to this movie with, you know, he had that same kind of presence of Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Dragon, which, by the way, I just rewatched Lilo and Stitch, like, a week ago. It's still great, still awesome, and it's still very emotional. I think a lot of the DNA of Lilo and Stitch is in this movie too. So if you like Lilo and Stitch, which, like, if you have a soul, you probably should. I think I would say give The Croods a shot if you haven't seen it. I think their relationship really works. It gets very emotional, and, like, I got a little teary eyed at the end. I'll admit, it gets a little emotional.
Yeah.
And I think
that's
Cage,
what it's for.
Exactly. And Cage throws himself into the caveman role and has, like, a lot of fun with it. And then like every once in a while, there's, like, one line reading where you're like, oh yeah, this is Nicolas Cage. You know what I mean? Like, it just,
there's one in particular that I was like, this is amazing. And I can't remember what it was, 'cause I didn't write it down.
Was it the one where Ryan Reynolds, like, escapes from his log and Cage shouts, he's loose.
Yes, that was it, actually, yeah.
Because that's the one that jumped out to me, for sure.
Hey, Thunk.
You have a spider on your face.
Oops.
He's loose!
Perfect.
How does this role fit into the roles that we've seen Cage play so far, Mike? What do you think?
You know, I think it's interesting to see him, Cage, be kind of... shifting to the fatherly role.
I had that written down too, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that. I feel like he's done that before, probably. I can't, Con Air. But, when I talk about it in regards to The Croods, I mean, like, not in a father out for revenge action movie way, like just right. as like an emotional father that's there.
Yeah, and I would say I actually wrote that down. It is interesting to note. I think we're starting to see Cage shift more frequently into these father figure roles. I mean, I wrote them. I actually like was going back through my past episodes and was like, oh yeah, there's Knowing, there's Astro Boy, there's Kick-Ass, there's Sorcerer's Apprentice, there's Drive Angry, there's Trespass, Ghost Rider 2, and Stolen. All of those movies have Cage either as a father or as a mentor to a younger person. And I don't know why it took me until The Croods to see that pattern, because that's a lot of movies. That's a lot of movies right there.
And I think it's because all those other movies fall into that, like, out-for-revenge action movie trope father.
Yeah.
And this is just, like, an emotional father figure.
Yeah, this movie is explicitly about the father-daughter relationship going on here, and all of those movies have something else going on that, you know, all that stuff is there. You know, Cage is the father to, you know, his son in Knowing, and Cage is the father to Astro Boy and Astro Boy, and, you know, he is the mentor to Dave and Sorcerer's Apprentice and all that stuff, but, like, they're all about other things. They're about, like, crazy big world-saving plots or, you know, intense revenge thrillers or whatever. And this one is just about, like, you know, the Croods trying to survive and Cage trying to understand his daughter. So, yeah, I think that's definitely I think it's interesting that we both noted that for this movie and not for any of his other ones. That's kind of interesting.
That's pretty funny.
I also will say we've seen Nicolas Cage try to investigate the actions of a young girl while his wife, played by Catherine Keener, tries to get him to stop. Before, in 8mm, of course.
Interesting.
So there's that. That could have been a Boom Goes the Dynamite, but you know, whatever.
It's a different podcast,
exactly. So what are the moments or scenes that stood out to you in the Croods, Mike? What I'm assuming anything with Belt. I think you were a big fan of Belt.
Yes, just Belt in general as a character is amazing. One of the things I love that, like, in these kind of goofy cartoony things, like in this genre, is specifically about, like, to take place in history, like, where there's just, like, anachronistic stuff. I think it happens in Trek a lot, you know, where...
absolutely happens in Shrek.
Yeah.
That's the entire thing of Shrek. That's the entire movie.
Yeah. Where it's just, like, you know, the thing, stuff from modern times. But, like, you know, a guy invents, like, oh, I call him shoes, like, it's just like, and it's real cool and shit.
Yeah.
It's just really funny and goofy, but that whole montage where Grug tries to have an idea, and it's just, which I feel like might be the Looney Tunes segment you're talking about.
There's a few Looney Tunes segments, but that's definitely that's one of the ones that stabs me too. Yeah,
where he's just like talking in this real smooth jazz cat voice. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I call it, I can't remember any of them, I call it a lifterator, and he like flings himself on a rock. Yes. Like stupid stuff. Yes. That whole sequence was great.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Nicolas Cage kind of doing this like weird hippie voice, like a very, yeah, very smooth voice.
Hey, wait, let's ask that ugly lady if she's seen Dad.
Huh?
Haven't seen him.
Wow! What are you doing?
Yeah, wow, I was up all night because, like, all these ideas just kept coming to me.
Is that a snake?
Belt! New and improved! Ow! It's even self-tightening! Ow!
What is that on your head?
It's called desperation.
I call it a rug. Rhymes with grug. And this one, I call it a ride. Rhymes with grug.
That doesn't rhyme.
It's gonna get us places faster than shoes. Yeah! Try to keep up!
I wish I had a ride.
And painting is a thing of the past. I call this a snapshot.
Oh, let's do it again. I think I blinked.
I call them shades.
The sun doesn't hurt my eyes anymore. Where do you get these great ideas?
Since I don't have a brain, they're coming from my stomach, down deep below, and then up again into my mind.
I think my favorite part of that montage is when he invents like a snapshot photography or whatever, yeah, and it's like he puts like mud or something on Thunk's face and then smacks him with a rock. And Thunk falls down, and I think they hit the best line afterwards. It's like, do it again. I think I blinked. And for some reason, it made me laugh really hard. And then they do it again later, and it made me laugh really hard again, too.
I'm glad.
But yeah, that montage of just Cage having different silly ideas because he's jealous of Ryan Reynolds, I thought was really, really funny. And yeah, Kate, and that's one of those things where it's like, this is a very Nick Cage thing going on right yeah. here. That voice that he's doing is fantastic. Otherwise, I did want to mention the scene where Grug gets punched by monkeys a lot. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a lot of physical comedy in this movie, and it's all pretty well executed, I think. It's all pretty yeah. pretty well done.
Yeah. Oh, I just thought of, I like the recurring bit where Guy will dress up like a lady version of a mon- yes. of an animal.
That was the Looney Tunes thing that I was talking about.
Yeah. I just realized that, actually.
Yeah, because there's two major scenes in the movie where, Guy will have his big idea. It's always his big idea. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
this is like the biggest idea he's ever had. It's always like, dress up like a lady version of an animal and like beckon one over.
I really like the second one with the tiger when they're in the tar pit, because he has Belts play like I forget what he tells him, like a romantic yet emotional music. Yes. on like a rib cage. This is very silly.
Yes, very, very silly. And this movie is just very silly. It's pretty delightful. But like, that's, I think what I like about it, it's very silly, but it does have that emotional core to it. And one of my favorite things that like kind of shows you how similar Grug and Eep are as characters, even though they're very different. Is that, when Eep first discovers fire, she, like, you know, freaks the fuck out and, like, does this whole thing. And just, like, she, like, tries to make Ryan Reynolds make more fire. And so she, like, grabs him, like, tries to squeeze it out of him or whatever. Yeah. And then Grug has the exact same reaction when he...
right.
when he sees the fire for the first time. But then Eep is acting like he's a fool for, like, not getting what the...
right.
getting it, even though he's doing the exact same thing, which I thought was pretty great. It felt like a very, like... I felt like a very true-to-life, like, father-daughter kind of relationship, even though these people are, you know, millions of years B.C., you know? Like, they're capable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point, where, you know, you figure out how to use your phone, but then your first cell phone as a little kid or whatever, and then your dad doesn't understand it, and now he's an idiot because you have to explain it to him.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I did really like the scene, I think, right... after that, where Thunk accidentally, all the Croods accidentally light themselves on fire, and then it's like Eep and Guy off in the distance talking, and they're like, well, they're not that bad, and they turn around and just like the whole forest is on fire.
Yeah.
That's pretty Try great. To lose it in the tall, dry grass.
That was really great. That was really funny. yeah, I also really love that first sequence before Guy shows up, where it's just the Croods trying to get an egg from the giant creature, and you're kind of introduced to the family for the first time, like, with mm-hmm. the hunt, trying to, like, get their food. I thought that was, like, a really great way to, like, introduce every member of the family. You already, at this point, introduced to, like, Eep. She kind of narrates the beginning of the movie and, like, kind of sort of introduced the family, but then you kind of, this is the first time you see them in action. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, like, a lot of fun. Just, like, the action is a lot of fun. It goes all over the place. And, like, you know, it's a very dynamic chase sequence. The part where they release the baby, and it's great.
and it's set to, like, football marching band music. Right. So it's, like, really goofy and fun. Yes. There was a thing I was going to say, and I have forgotten it.
Oh, no.
So that is... don't worry about it.
That is a shame. But speaking of the intro, actually, I thought the 2D animated intro was very cool. It's just Eep kind of introducing the family. Like, it's before their 3D CGI animation. It's just, like, kind of 2D, like very crudely drawn, like hand-drawn stuff. And it's, like, you know, just introducing the family and explaining why they don't go after, like, anything new, and they're terrified of the world, and, like, everybody else they know is dead, and all and all that. I thought it was pretty great. I do like the message of this movie. Like, the message of this movie is very nice, very simple for kids. Like, you know, just because something's new doesn't mean it's bad and that kind of thing. And, like, you should explore and have curiosity. But at the same time, I think the movie kind of subverts its own message because every time they do find something new, it does try to kill them. Like, they and they do almost die every single time.
That's true. Yeah. Really, the only thing that's new that doesn't try to kill them is Guy.
Right.
And
that could have gone a very different way. You know? It could have tried to kill them.
Yeah. Oh, I remember the thing, because it happens right at the beginning, where it introduces one of my favorite recurring bit, where Grug keeps hoping that Graham is dead.
Yes.
And he always does a head count and gets excited, and then Graham shows up and he frowns.
Yeah, that was pretty great. That's a very funny reward. Like, that's a really funny bit, and I think it culminates really well towards the ends, when right before Grug is like having his montage of ideas. And he's having this montage of ideas because, like, A, he wants to impress the family, but then B, somebody says, like, Gran says something like, oh, if he has an idea, I'll drop dead. And then he, like, turns to the camera and smiles and kind of, like, slowly lowers down.
It's great.
Pretty great. Pretty great. Yeah. Other stuff. I mean, we should talk about the ending a little bit of the movie, where it seems like Cage sacrifices himself for the family, right, and, like, tosses them over the gorge. Like, that was a very emotional, like, very powerful scene. I thought his, like, ending, like, that ending bit with him and Emma Stone was great, and then, you know, he survives, and he, like, goes into, like, a cave, and he finds, like, the cat that's been chasing them all the movie, and then it turns out the cat just wants to be loved, and they're, like, friends now.
Just wanted a hug, which Grug invented.
Exactly, and then he ends up making his way back over to the gorge, and he meets up with his family, and everyone's happy again towards the end of the movie, and they all have pets, and, you know, they all live happily ever after, probably. we'll see more in Croods 2 in 2020, I suppose. But
I hope that would be amazing.
Yeah, apparently it's in development, and the original cast is back and stuff like that. Like, that's like, I have not been following the development of Croods 2 very closely because I've just watched the Croods for the first time just now. But I will see Croods 2 in theaters. I think we'll have to if we're doing this podcast still.
We're still doing this.
I mean, by then we should have this podcast wrapped up theoretically, but we'll come back. We'll probably come back and do whenever Cage comes out with a new movie. We should just, like, do more episodes.
Do special episodes.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Anyway, yeah. Other stuff you want to talk about, Mike, or should we move on to reviews? What do you want to do?
I just want a Belt spinoff. Really, is what I'm saying. Forget the Croods and Croods 2.
I can't believe how in sync we are with this. I wrote the same thing.
Did you really?
I said Belt the Sloth is a delight and should have his own spinoff movie.
Yeah. I mean, if, like, Scrat from the Ice Age movies can have... Does he have his own movie? I don't think so.
No, but basically, like, all the Ice Age movies kind of became Scrat movies as they went on. Like, like, the other characters were there, but they were, like, Scrat movies first and foremost.
Right.
Like, but, like, if the Penguins of Madagascar can get their own movie.
Right.
Or I think a better example, if the Minions can get their own movie.
Exactly.
There's no reason why Belt the Sloth has to relegate himself to a supporting character in the Croods, right?
No. I agree.
Yeah. All right. I think that about wraps up our thoughts on the Croods, Mike. It's a very delightful romp. It's just a really good time. And I really enjoyed watching the Croods. And it was a nice break from, I think, you know, these like very, like, drab thrillers that we've been watching over the past few episodes. But now let's move on, Mike, and get in some Letterboxd reviews for the Croods. Ready for this? I got a 5-star one here. First off, Nicolas Cage is a caveman! That's all caps. Most of this is all caps. That's amazing! Why did I hate this back in 2013? And he's nuts! Yeah, Cage is Cage, doing some nutty things, but he does it in a believable fashion, playing a character that could have been over-villainized if put in the wrong hands, but thankfully, they managed to still make him relatable and still heartfelt, being one who just wants his family safe, even when taking the safety precautions to the extreme. Way to go, Cage! Plus, he gets beat up repeatedly by monkeys.
Yeah.
How could you not want that in your Nicolas Cage movie, you know?
And Fung has the great line, I got it, Dad, just stop running into their fists.
Yes.
Great. Perfect. 10 out of 10.
I also have the one added B where Gran punches him one time in that monkey circle. That was great. Here's a 3.5-star review of the Croods. I guess this counts as me liking a Nicolas Cage movie. Embarrassing to say the least, but I'll move on in mere time. Until then... This was one hell of a prehistoric acid trip. What I thought was going to be a CGI version of Ringo Starr's caveman ended up being a CGI version of Ringo Starr's caveman with tons of dialogue and a lung full of bath salts. A caveman family running up and down walls like the Hulk is the first thing I see, followed by the most shameless ripoff of Ice Age's fruit football scene I've ever witnessed, but done so much better than the latter that I can't be angry whatsoever. I can't really explain what I saw beyond that. Literally, I can't. Thus, that portion of the review will be missing. All I can say is that this movie was an acid trip of Jurassic preparations, and I regret 0 minutes I put towards it. This movie needs no sequel, but since they are indeed making one, I'm open to seeing it, especially if it means an even stupider script than the original. I would also point out that this review says an acid trip of Jurassic preparations, and I think he means proportions.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Right. Here's a 4-star review from Letterboxd. Wow. If this is based on real events, everything I thought I knew about my ancestors and about the animal kingdom was completely wrong. That's it. That's the review.
That's the whole review.
Yeah. I finally got one more here. It's a 3-star review of The Croods. Someone told me that this film should be educational for children as well as fun. I don't think so. Not unless the Earth was inhabited by flying piranhas and turtles. Walking whales and continental shifts took place over the course of several days. Then again, maybe I'm just being grumpy and not understanding this film. Overall, the humor in this film works at times, and DreamWorks tries to steer away from the pop culture sing-song comedy that plagues so many of its other films. The adventure was interesting, and I liked the idea of Grug becoming useless and obsolete in a changing world. Perhaps a metaphor that translates well to contemporary society, with many workers finding themselves unable to provide for their families in a changing and confusing new world. However, for every good step the Croods takes, it takes one step backwards due to its tried and tested story arcs, annoying anthropomorphic creatures, and anachronistic humor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That person hates the fun.
I know. Like, what? I still don't get, like, you're watching, like, an animated kids movie. It's a DreamWorks movie, A. Like, you're gonna get, like, you know, anachronistic humor, like weird creatures and stuff. Like, why would you not, like, know that? Why would you not expect that going in, you know?
Yeah. All the things that we said we loved. The anthropomorphized creatures. The anachronistic humor. This person hates.
This guy says he hates. Anyway, that about wraps it up for The Croods today. Mike, sounds like we're both fans.
Yeah. We're crude heads.
We're crude heads. And one day we'll be crude two heads, hopefully, whenever that happens. Anyway, Mike, where can we find you online this
week? You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, and help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you email about the title of your email, because we produce so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next Complete Works as Nicolas Cage goes back to video on demand and reunites with his Con Air co-star John Cusack for a thriller called The Frozen Ground, which I've heard is actually not bad. So
wow. I'm surprised.
We'll see what happens. But plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we're probably talking Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, the long-awaited sequel to Fantastic Beasts. I say long-awaited. It's middle-awaited, I guess. I don't know.
It's middle-expected.
Middle-expected. I don't know. I've heard not great things. We'll see what happens. I love Harry Potter so much, Mike. This movie might hurt me. But
yeah, I'm sorry.
Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage. Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Think about that while you're leaving Las Vegas! Boom!